Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Caregiver and Physician Conversations, sponsored by eCareDiary.com. I'm Marjorie Pabst, your host, and the co-author of Enrich Your Caregiving Journey, and the author of Words of Care, my most recent book, which can be accessed on my website at mycaregivingcoach.com, at amazon.com, or at ecarediary.com. The purpose of caregiver and physician conversations is to provide practical information for you, the caregiver, particularly on how to have meaningful connections with doctors in the medical community. Today, I welcome back Dr. Kesavan Kuti from the American College of Physicians. We will be discussing getting to the root of the problem with loved ones. Dr. Kuti will be providing some practical tips for getting to the root cause and beyond the symptoms of your patients and of any disease that you come in contact with. Ultimately, our tips today will assist caregivers and their doctors during office visits with medical professionals. Dr. Kuti is a professor of medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin and academic chairman of medicine at St. Joseph's Hospital, Milwaukee, which is part of the Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare System. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Kesavan Kuti.
Thank you, Marjorie. It's great to be back on the show. Caregivers are special, and I appreciate the opportunity to connect with them. I do want to make one word of disclosure, and that is that although I'm a member in good standing of the American College of Physicians, I'm not a spokesman for the college because that is the privilege of the president of the college. Also, these are my own opinions, and these are not those of my employer or the hospital where I work.
Right. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate that. So, Dr. Kuti, why is this subject of getting to the root cause of what's really going on so important? And why is it critical that doctors and caregivers identify early on what is really happening? I mean, this seems like an obvious question, but there's a lot more to it. So could you explain that for us?
To directly answer that question, there are three very specific reasons why we need to get to the root cause of the problem. And one is that if you dwell on too many other things, you waste resources, waste time, and leave a patient unhappy. And patients like quick resolutions to their problems, and that is why it is very important to get to the root cause of the issue. Also, among those of us who have been pursuing methods to improve physician-patient communication or conversation, it is common knowledge that many physicians are not so adept at listening. There are a number of reasons for that, but without going into it in detail, one study by two authors, Beckman and Frankel, a number of years ago, almost 25 years ago, showed that when doctors asked patients to describe their concerns, doctors took no more than 18 seconds before they redirected the patient to the first concern that the patient expressed. Kim Marvel and their colleagues did a follow-up study, which is almost designed similar to Beckman's study, almost a decade and a half later, and found that things had improved slightly. That is, now physicians interrupt the story about 23 seconds after it begins. They use the word redirection in preference to interruption, but still the effects are the same. What is more, Beckman and Frankel found that in only one of the 52 visits that they reviewed as part of the study, did the doctor come back to talk about any other potential concerns that the patient had. So essentially what this means is that patients and their caregivers included need to think through what they want to talk with their physician first. They need to think through first and then prioritize what they want to report, particularly if the visit is going to be the usual 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So this is really alarming. These are alarming statistics, doctor. So if these conversations are normally around 15 minutes, we know they are, what can caregivers do at the very beginning of the visit to ensure that the concerns, all the concerns, are going to be addressed, even in that short period of time?
Number one, even before the visit begins, the caregiver and the patient should communicate among themselves exactly what issues they want to discuss. And the study is done by Marvel and Associates, the second study that I said, ultimately showed that it is not really possible to discuss more than three concerns during an ordinary office visit. So the first thing is to have a discussion among the patient and the caregiver. The second is to have a maximum of three concerns if the visit is going to be about 15 minutes or thereabout. And sometimes the caregivers and the patient also share the same physician. So in that situation, you know, even if the physician asks the caregiver how that person is, they must ensure that the caregiver does not usurp the time from the patient's visit to address their own issues. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they should answer that question differently and bring the focus back to the patient. The physician also should deny such requests and concentrate on the patient, because that's what primarily the visit is about.
Yes, yes. Very interesting. You also, I know, believe that it's important to describe symptoms in some sort of sufficient detail, even if the visit is short. So how would a patient and a caregiver do that?
Well, a big responsibility for that is to, you know, have the physician have the mindset to set the agenda. But that happens less frequently, and therefore the important thing for the caregiver to do is to warn the physician that they have more than one number of issues that they need to discuss with them, or at least give them specifically, they can say that we have three items that we want to discuss with you today, and I'll start with the most pressing issue. Say that, and then, you know, if there are redirections or interruptions to that, go back to the list and stay on the list and try to complete as many of them as possible. So that's a very important one. Also, the physicians should, I can elaborate on this if you like.
Sure, go right ahead.
The visit should also begin with an open-ended question from the physician.
Yes. Yes. I'm not sure how all of us can encourage physicians to ask open-ended questions, but I do know, as well as you, that in medical colleges today, that physicians are being trained, those student physicians are being trained to listen more, to ask open-ended questions. So we can only hope there'll be more and more doctors who will do that.
Correct.
Even
if the physician does not begin with an open-ended question, in other words, what brings you here today or what are your concerns today, the patient or the caregiver always has the opportunity to bring that up and say that we have a number of concerns today, or we have three issues that we want to discuss.
Yes.
But that said, you know, although you mentioned about the medical school training, established physicians are trained to begin the interview with an open-ended question, thus setting the agenda. They usually ask, what brings you here today, or what are your concerns today? But the studies now show that this sort of question and agenda setting happens in only about 25% of the office visits and is more likely to happen with fellowship-trained physicians, according to Marvell's study. So the patient and the caregiver has to be prepared with a prioritized list of issues.
Yes.
If there are multiple items, it probably, as I said, begin by saying that there are several issues that they're going to have to report to the physician in the order of priority. Even though I mentioned this, I do have to say that this technique has never been subjected to a study, so I can't guarantee it would work. But letting the physician know that there are more than one concerns, more than one concern that the patient and the caregiver are going to bring, that sort of warning people will take and follow through.
That is a wonderful tip. That is an incredibly wonderful tip, because that can help everyone get past the symptom and to the root cause. That's really great.
And let me mention one other thing. It is important that the caregiver and, wherever possible, the patient describe their symptom in sufficient detail, but without being overly detailed. It is best not to offer your own diagnosis, although a lot of times the caregiver and the patient may be right. But, if you offer your own diagnosis, the risk that you run is that if the doctor agrees with your diagnosis, then a real but different diagnosis might not get made in time.
Mm-hmm.
Or if the doctor disagrees with you, you're likely to get upset. Either way, the patient loses.
That's absolutely right. Would you give us an example? I know you've multiple examples in your experience, doctor, but could you give us an example of what can happen if only symptoms are treated and not the root cause?
Sure. Although this particular instance did not happen in the office, I'm aware of a situation where a patient who was recovering from surgery, this person underwent a surgery involving the neck. They had a fusion. The doctors did a fusion of the cervical spine or the neck spine. And during the first night of recovery, the patient told the nurses that he was having heartburn. That's the actual word he used. The patient had a history of heartburn in the past, but he was being given the medications intravenously to prevent them, the episodes of heartburn. But they gave him some antacid, and the patient's pain was slightly relieved. But he continued to have pain in the rest of the night, but he thought ultimately the antacid would work, or I don't know what he thought. But finally, when the physician came the following morning and listened to his symptoms from the night before, the physician thought that pain was unusual for a heartburn episode and diagnosed a heart attack. Of course, the patient had, as I mentioned before, a history of heartburn, and the nurses believed him when he told them that he was having heartburn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he had said that he was having some sort of soreness in the chest, they might have diagnosed differently and followed up a bit more. But I agree, it is 50-50, but at least the odds of diagnosing a heart attack earlier would have been better that way for the patient if he had merely mentioned to him his symptoms and not offered a sort of a quasi-diagnosis of the problem.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. Would you also give our listeners a practical example of how systems can easily mask the real root cause, the real issue, even for doctors?
Certainly. Let me cite one example. I have a number of patients with sleep disorders. The adage is that I'm a trained lung disease specialist. In our community of pulmonary physicians, we say that old pulmonologists never die; they just go to sleep. So we do sleep disorders. So one individual with a sleep apnea and hypertension. These are combinations of disease, because sleep apnea, there's a definite predilection to have hypertension in these patients. So he had both these entities. He suffered a recent cold and called for an appointment, and I squeezed him in for one visit. And the blood pressure was high, and he told me that he was not using any decongestants or anything. And earlier during the interview, I also asked him how he was doing with the CPAP, which is a treatment for sleep apnea. He told me that he was using a CPAP for sleep apnea every night and taking all his medications regularly, although he said he might have missed a dose that morning because, you know, I found his blood pressure was high that morning. So as we winding up the visit, I asked him, is there anything else? And he responded, Doc, why am I feeling so sleepy? Remember, this is the original symptom for which he came to see me, and as a result of that, sleep apnea was diagnosed. And, you know, in somebody who's already receiving treatment, it is not an easy thing to figure this out, and therefore that involved a number of additional questions that took us well past the time that I had squeezed him in for.
Mm-hmm.
Although I gave him regular prescriptions for change of CPAP mask and tubing, and he collected them from the vendor, it turned out that he was using the same mask for over a year and a half. The mask had worn and it was leaking and was not getting sufficient pressure, which caused his blood pressure to rise because his sleep apnea was not being adequately treated. So I asked him to return within a week with the CPAP machine, a new mask and tubing, so that I could be sure that he had changed the equipment and he was using the new equipment and not the old one, and which he complied with, and that problem was resolved. So basically what happened here is that his symptom of, or what I found in the office as elevated blood pressure, was really a proxy for insufficient treatment of his sleep apnea, which was because he had not changed his mask and it was leaking.
Yes. Oh, my. I think this type of example gives us all pause and develops our awareness, Dr. Kuti, for looking at root cause, trying to find root cause rather than symptoms. I want to move us on to a question that you and I have discussed, and that is the issue of trust. Because it would seem to me, and I know it seems to you, that trust between doctor and patient, doctor and caregiver and patient, is so important for getting at what is really bothering the patient, the real root cause. Could you talk a little bit about trust for us today?
Certainly. You know, in keeping with our interview this morning, talk show this morning, I still want to emphasize the most important thing for physicians to do is to take time to listen to the patient and not run away with the first symptom that they report. Give them a certain amount of time so that they can describe what is going on and what their concerns are. In fact, this is one of the important things that garners trust in the physician. A patient who is prematurely cut off in their symptom telling is not someone who's going to trust the physician completely, because they get the feeling that the physician has not listened to them fully, and they wonder. The trust is not at a personal level. This is, in this situation, it's not a personal level. It is because of the feeling that you wonder, patient wonders, does my doctor know my whole story? Because he didn't stay for the whole thing that I wanted to tell him or her.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's important to garner trust and generate the genuine impression that the doctor is going to be there for the patient when the patient needs the doctor, and that he or she will be an advocate for his patients.
Yes.
So it's important to make the patient feel comfortable. It is important to set the agenda the first time the doctor sees the patient, at least, and preferably for future interactions. Define a method of communication. Make sure that the patient's calls are returned in a timely fashion. In my practice, which is a diminutive practice in that I don't have a nurse or medical assistant. I return all my calls myself. So I don't want to sound preachy, but at the same time, it is important that the patient's phone calls or messages are returned in a timely manner. Physicians should use eye contact when talking to the patients, look at the patient and understand subtle cues that come from the response to their questions. It's very interesting. In this situation, the introduction of the electronic health record has brought a barrier between the patient and the physician because often physicians are entering the information into their computers. Sometimes the computer faces the patient and the physician is facing the computer so that the physician's back is to the patient, which deprives them of the opportunity to look at the patient's facial expression and look at them in their eyes as they're relating their symptoms. But anyway, that's an entirely different issue.
It is, but you know, it's a subtle thing, doctor, and I'd never thought of that until you just brought this up, that technology, as in many other areas of life, can become a barrier to communication.
Right. But some innovative practices have actually done something about this. They have hired scribes who will record what happened during the interview.
Yes.
And that information is entered into the patient's electronic health record. So this way the physician doesn't have to take time out to write down what the patient is saying and a record is made of the patient's symptoms.
Yes.
But, coming back to your original question about trust, the visits to the office, it is important that the caregiver and the patient go over their symptoms, what to discuss, and arrange them by priority. It is important for patients and their caregivers to ask the doctor if they need extra time. Although it might involve rescheduling a visit, it makes that visit more complete because it gives everybody an opportunity to address the concerns. It gives them the opportunity to tell their concerns, and the doctors gives an opportunity to address them. Caregivers must also understand that the doctor needs to talk with the patient one-on-one from time to time. And this is another opportunity where the patient and physician can establish trust in each other. So communication should be, for the most part, between the doctor and the patient, as long as the patient is able to participate in a conversation. The doctor should certainly spend time with the caregiver as well, but not outside the earshot of the patient, because it's one of the things that clearly brings distrust between the patient and the physician.
Yeah. Those are terrific tips, Dr. Kuti, because, you know, sometimes it's those subtle body language things as well that can get in the way of a good communication. You know, in the interest of time, I'm going to move us on to a next question because this, I think, will be important for many of our caregivers out there in certain illnesses. And I'd like to ask the question about, are there certain illnesses where identifying the real cause is even more difficult than even the ones you've described?
Well, one of the things that comes to mind is sexual dysfunction. Now, in a pre-Viagra era, before these treatments for erectile dysfunction came to occupy our television screens, erectile dysfunction had a lot of proxies. Patients would say that there is excess fatigue or mood disturbance or talk about disagreements with their spouses or their significant others. Because of these emergence of these medications, their easy availability, and the sexual revolution, all of them have made such conversations more of a matter of routine. However, one still needs to ask the patient about their sexual health, and this is one of the issues to be covered in a private conversation with the doctor and the patient. a caregiver is best not present during that inquiry because patient will not be willing or comfortable discussing those things with the caregiver. And this may not apply to all the patients who have a caregiver. Another important symptom that sometimes often leads to divorce, besides snoring, is pain during intercourse.
Yeah.
And this almost always a feminine symptom, and in many instances it is related to childhood sexual abuse. But sometimes it is related to dryness from taking medications, especially antidepressants. So the proxy for this often comes in the form of a couple being married for some time but not having children. When you talk to them about that, or when they want to talk to them about that and you inquire into it, you find that they're not having sexual intercourse. And when you ask further why that is, they come out with the answer that there's a fair amount of pain during intercourse. Patients need to be counseled about the best way to deal with dryness. There is to be very discreet in the questioning. They need to be counseled about the best way to deal with the symptom. And unless there is a deep understanding and empathy in the relationship, the lack of sexual relationship eventually leads to drifting. And I need not dwell on the consequences of that. But, you know, this is a common symptom, but very underreported and takes different kind of proxies.
Well, thank you very much for all of this information. You've given us a myriad of tips, and I encourage our listeners to listen back to the archive of this show for all of those wonderful tips about things like not mentioning more than 3 concerns, especially if you only have 15 minutes, to warn the doctor that you have more concerns than one, to not try to diagnose yourself, to prioritize your concerns for a doctor. All of these things help us get at the root cause rather than just dwelling on symptoms. I would like to thank you so much, Dr. Kuti, for being on our show again. You come with a wealth of information, and it's not just the information you provide for us. It's some of the subtleties within the communications when in the doctor's office that I think are most interesting and helpful for our listeners. So thank you very much today for being on our program.
Thank you very much. It's my privilege. Thank you.
Yes. We look forward to talking with you again. And listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. As always, every Tuesday is an Empowering Family Caregiver show. So be sure to tune in next week as well. I look forward to being with you again on other Tuesdays. Thanks again. Thanks to Dr. Kuti. And everyone, have a great day. Goodbye.